Russ's Tool Shed.
Come on out to the shed. Russ's Tool Shed, gonna feed your head. Who wants a shirt? Anybody want some shirts? I got some MSDN shirts. Here we go. Here we go. That's it, Dan. Oh, boy, we've got some pens, some plastic pens. Here we go. Good pens for you. All right, and oh man, we got some really good books on. Who wants an ASP.NET 3.5 book? There you go. And would anyone like a copy of Windows Vista Ultimate Edition? Who wants one of those right here? All right, you got that. Russ's Tool Shed presents It's All About the Tools. That's what we're going to be talking about today. Very happy to be here, and thanks once again for coming on out and supporting this developer community event that we're having here today. I'd like to introduce my co-host, Mr. Stan Schultes. Give it up for Stan.
Thank you.
Stan's an MVP, which is one of our most valuable professionals. I got some folks coming on later on to describe what that program's all about. And when we first start doing this session, the way it came to be was we were actually at a code camp. We're at a code camp here today in South Florida and at DeVry University. Thank you very much, DeVry University, for hosting this. And very close to Fort Lauderdale. It's actually in Miramar, where is where we're at right now. And there was another code camp we went to, what was it, a couple years ago, Stan? Went up in Jacksonville.
Jacksonville.
And we were carpooling and driving back toward Tampa.
We were in the Rustang.
Yeah, the Rustang. And then I said, Stan said, you know, I sat in on your session on Windows Communication Foundation, you know, WCF. And so the best thing I liked about that session was the fact that that tool you showed, Fiddler, it was great. I was able to see what was going across the wire, and it was really a great, great tool. I said, you know what? I've been presenting now for 10 years for Microsoft. They presented to over 100,000 developers, probably about 1,800 sessions. And many of those sessions, I would get feedback similar to that. It wasn't the technology that I was presenting that got the comments. It was the tool that I showed in relation to the technology. And we said, well, we should start doing a series about this. And that's how we start thinking about all these different tools that we're going to show you here today. And we have some special guest speakers today just to kind of give you a format of how the show is going to go. Jason and Joe, you just want to come up to the front here so everybody can see you. And once they come up here, we'll go ahead and introduce them. And once again, while they're walking up here, a very special thanks to DeVry and also the South Florida Code Camp team. I know there's a lot of folks here that worked very hard to put on this event. For folks that are not familiar with the Code Camps, these are free events done by the developer community for the developer community. Several tracks, a lot of great knowledge. A round of applause for the South Florida Code Camp team. And Joe Healy here is on my far right. Wave to everybody there, Joe. Joe's going to be here doing... Joe's our developer evangelist, one of the developer evangelists here in Florida. He's going to do a great wrap-up at the end on a lot of excellent developer community activity that's taking place.
Technically, I'm the senior developer.
Technically, you're the senior developer. Wow. He keeps rubbing that one in. Well, that's a matter of debate, Joe. We'll have to see that one. And then Jason is our director of product management at Infragistics, and he's also a Microsoft MVP as well. And he's part of the Ineta Speaker Bureau. So Jason's going to be doing a demo later on an incredible product, which I think you said is free.
Yep.
We're going to take a really good look at some excellent development tools there.
And never before seen.
That's right.
World premiere.
All right, give it up for them. Well, they'll be back later. All right. All right, so... Many times as a developer, I've been a developer my entire career, and many times a thought pops in my head, there has got to be a better way. You know, if I'm doing a particular task or a particular function, you know, a lot of times I'll say, I wish there was a tool that did X, Y, Z for me. And, you know, there probably is. You just don't know about it. And that's one of the purposes of this show, is to raise the level of awareness. And I mean, this is really in all aspects of life, isn't it? My dad, may he rest in peace, he used to know how to fix anything. And the reason he knew how to fix anything, because he had a bazillion tools, right? He had, you know, we worked on the engine. I remember one time doing a tune-up on the car, and there was one spark plug way in the back you couldn't get at with a regular socket wrench. He goes, wait a minute, Russ, I got a special tool for that. It's got a hook in it, you know, it goes all the way around, pops it right out, piece of cake, right? Makes the job very easy. And that's what we're talking about in our development world, the same thing. If you have the right tool, you can get so much done quicker and better and faster, and that's what we hope to really help communicate here. And just keeping up with all the information. What are all these SDKs that are out there? What are all the new tools? How do I find out about them? These are all things we're going to cover here today in the show. So finding the right tool is what it's all about to solve, in this episode anyway, these common developer challenges. I used to work with a guy named Larry Barnes up in New England when I first started at Microsoft, part of the Bob and Larry show. We go way back. And he used to always say, that's developer challenge number 9, right? He had a list of developer challenges, kind of like Excedrin Headache 101, right? That same type of thing. And
so I want to get video on my website. Can I do it?
Well, it just might be. That's another one of those problems. That's right. So building and deploying video capability into websites is a common challenge. And if it's not a common challenge, at some point, some of these things might be, you know. So it's good to know about them, have them in your back pocket. All right, so how many people here are developing websites right now, web development? All right, and how many people here need the ability to either incorporate videos as part of your website or do mapping services? So there you go. These are common challenges, right? Many of us right in the same room we are facing here today. Some of these other ones, like managing your development chain, I mean, this is a challenge for me all the time. How much hard drive space do I have? What are the resources that are being gobbled up on this machine? And there are tools out that can help you identify and work through these problems. What's exactly in those messages in the service layer? You know, what really is going across the wire? You know, it's supposed to be encrypted, but I really don't know because I can't see it. So another type of challenge if you're doing that type of work of talking from one application to another. Storage. You know, who doesn't need storage, right? This is a never-ending, you know, challenge. We all need storage. And having storage that's accessible throughout the rest of the world and shareable with other developers is becoming even more and more of a challenge. And then how about creating beautiful styled Windows presentation foundation applications with no lines of code, WPF apps, and no design team? Ooh, boy, developers love that, right? Because, you know, designers and developers kind of get along, kind of don't get along. We're kind of getting to the point where we can have lunch together now, you know, by the way. So, and this is going to be one of those things that Jason's actually going to show to show you yet another tool to help you out in building those type of applications. Office applications, building these, you know, to do it easily is a challenge. And again, that's a huge platform to take advantage of should your deployment be such that you want to deploy your applications to folks that have Office, one of the biggest platforms in the world to develop on. Then we're going to end up with a community update when we get done. So let's get into our first set of demos. And the first one actually involves three different technologies and products. So it's a Silverlight Streaming Publishing plugin for Expression Encoder 2.0. First of all, how many people here have ever used Expression Encoder? Show of hands. Not too bad. About 30% of you here in this room. What it is? It's a video editing software that comes part of our Expression Studio suite. And with that, you have the ability to publish these videos and encode them for Silverlight streaming. And so Silverlight is the second technology we'll be talking about. How many people here have actually started to play with Silverlight? Show of hands, a good number of folks. So Silverlight is our, you know, flash kind of product, but only better, right? So it's
a lot better.
It's multi-platform. You have a lot of developer flexibility in developing apps in .NET and as well as in Java. So it's pretty extensible. So a lot of good things there. So what about hooking these things up? Well, there's a plugin that will hook up Encoder to a service that we have, which is free, which is called silverlight.live.com, where you can actually park Silverlight applications. First thing I'll show you is the administration homepage. And if you go to the bottom, what this service allows you to do is park apps for free. How many and how big? Up to 10 gig. And streaming is free up to 5 terabytes of aggregated bandwidth per user account per month. Generally, the video should not exceed 10 minutes. So if you have like a short video or something you've got to show on your site, this is not just a playground, by the way. You can actually host, you know, production videos for your production website on this location. I'll show you how to do that toward the tail end of this demo. So again, another free service right there. Now, managing the account. So when you first go to silverlight.live.com, you got to have a live ID. You log in, you get an account, and basically you get these two things. You get the account ID, and I'm going to get an account key. Now, you have to remember these because these are two properties that we're going to need to set inside of Encoder to kind of map it to Silverlight Live. And then finally, we've got manage applications, and this is where all your apps will end up getting published to, and we'll come back to this page once it's all said and done. So let's go ahead and bring up Encoder, and we're going to go ahead and bring in a video. And we'll go ahead and bring in the ever-famous Bear video. So it's actually analyzing the video as it's reading it in. And you can start playing it through. And you can go ahead and add edit heads right here as it's playing through. Now, if you ever, you know, have any ex-boyfriends or girlfriends or ex-fiancés and you want to edit out of the film, you know, certain clips where they're in, boy, this is the tool for you, because what you can do now is you can just take this little marker and then just X out that one chunk right there, and now it'll just skip over, and you'll kind of see it be a little choppy when I play it back. All right, so this is a great thing. So that's the editing part, and you can edit multiple files, bring them all in here, and there's a lot of great capabilities with Encoder. Next thing to do is where we want to publish to. Now this is where you see the result of the plugin, right? So I applied the plugin. Once you do that, you'll see Silverlight Streaming come down as a choice. We're going to do an auto start publish, which means as soon as I get done encoding this, and by the way, when I did this file open or import up here, all different kinds of file types, you can see them all here, even MOV files. If you got QuickTime installed on your machine, it'll recognize that format, and you can bring all those types in, AVI files, and when it encodes it, it'll encode it as a WMV file, and that'll be able to be streamed with Silverlight. So some really slick technology right there. So we're going to automatically publish after we do the encoding. I hate the automatic name because it just gives you a name that just doesn't make sense. So we'll just call this DeVry, all right, because that's where we're at today. Here is the account number, and here is the key. I already pre-pasted those in, all right, that we had from our Silverlight Live page. The last thing to do before we set this thing is what kind of a, you know, skin do we want to have around this, where you've got your VCR type controls to pause and play and sound. You can specify what directory where you want to put these files. And it actually creates an entire Silverlight application for you is what this does. We're ready to do it. So let's go ahead and hit the encode button. Now, while this is encoding, what you'll see is a status bar up at the top come through. And it'll go ahead and start encoding the video. And once it does that and completes, then you're going to go look down to the right where it says the settings. And over here, you'll start seeing the actual files being uploaded and published to Silverlight Live. And we come up to Silverlight Live. Now it's checking the quota on our server, right? Make sure we're under the 10 gig. There's the bare WMV. That's the largest of the files it will upload, one of 12 files.
Looks like some of the students went home. It's uploading quickly.
Oh, yeah, I know. That's right. Got bandwidth. I get it now. Okay, yeah, great. All right. So I was wondering where you were coming out of that one. Thank you, Stan. Okay, now look at that. Finished. Right now what's going to do is pop up a local host version of this so you can just see it running on your machine. So you'll see the ASP.NET development server come up, see the actual video being played. You can see the... you know, little edit I made there, right there. You see a jump right there. So this is the piece I took out. And that's our bear video. Now, if I go back out to the applications page and we look down on the page toward the D section, And you should see DeVry, there it is. That's the one we just did today. And now you see your application properties. And the thing I want to point out here, remember I said how you can tie this into your production application? All you got to do is copy and paste this iframe right here. We all like that copy and paste technology, right? Isn't that great? So copy and then paste that into your page, and now you got reference to that video as part of your page. There's a second method as well that gets described here using a live control, and you can use some of these snippets as well to go ahead and use that approach to incorporate that to your application.
Cool.
So here's the application now. Notice this time it's being played off of silverlight.live.com, not through localhost. So what do you think of that? Pretty nice. And here's Mr. Stan Schulte.
Thank you. So we're going to talk about live services very briefly and then dive into a demo of Virtual Earth. And at the end of the demo, we're actually going to do something a little bit neat, and that is to show how the new spatial data type in SQL Server 2008 can actually play with Virtual Earth. So this is pretty compelling, I think. So we start at the dev.live.com site. And that's the starting point for all the services that we have on in the live ecosystem. You can see they've got links to the new live framework and the Azure services over here. But basically,
and actually, Stan, that is where you can get to SilverLight streaming. Like you see,
that's right.
So going down, and
the services that are available through live services are listed here. All right, these are all things that are programmable in your own application. SDK is behind all these things, so you can program them. Photos, search, SilverLight streaming, Spaces, which is a blogging site, Virtual Earth, which is the mapping application we're going to look at today, Windows Live ID for authentication services, and Windows Live Writer, which if you've never used is an awesome tool.
For blogging.
For blogging. For posting to most any blog engine. Alright, so, each of these services then has a page, and we'll go and look at the Virtual Earth page in particular. And most of these services also have an interactive SDK. And the interactive SDK lets you go and fiddle around with the tool and see how it works and actually take some code from, the example code and plug it into your own applications. All right, so we're going to go to the interactive SDK for Virtual Earth. And the way this works then is that on the left, there's a navigation bar in the blue panel. And in the center, in this case, is a map. It's showing the default map. So why don't we pick up, for example, show a specific map? Okay, so this happens to be looking at the Space Needle. I'll go to the Source Code tab and click Copy. Pop into Visual Studio 2008, where I've got Visual Studio loaded but no project created. So all I have to do here is do a File, New, Website. So I'll go here to the end and just give this thing a name. I guess we've started to use DeVry, so we'll continue to use DeVry. And when I click, I've chosen ASP.NET Website up in the Templates area. So click OK, and it'll give me an empty application with just a default page with nothing on it. Right-click on the project, and I'm going to add a new item, and this will be an HTM page.
And what this is actually going to be doing is calling a web service, correct?
Well, that's correct. So Virtual Earth is a web service that's out there, hosted on a Microsoft services site, and you're making calls out to it to get data about the maps that you're looking at. So here's the HTML page that I want, and I'm just going to take the code that's there and paste in the code that I got from Virtual Earth. So what we've got here then is a bit of script on the page that simply makes some references out, using JavaScript, but there's a getMap function. This is the main function on the page. And what getMap is going to do is new up a VE map, which is called my map in this case, and we're going to ask for a latitude and longitude location. All right, and this is the Space Needle's location, as it turns out. So then on the body onload, it calls getMap. So when we run this thing, we go back to the regular screen and just show that page in the browser. We'll take a look at a couple of the other functions that live over here. So there's lots of examples. You can control the map, through zooming and setting centers and moving around, panning the map. You can show and hide the controls on the map, like the navigation controls. This all comes with sample code that you can play with. We can play with shapes. These are things like push pins. All right, you can create your own kinds of shapes and manipulate those things. You can customize them. You can put shapes on layers. You can import data into shape layers. This thing is very programmable. I mean, it's really a cool tool. There's custom tile layers for the way that the maps actually look. And then there is some find information tools here. So we'll take a look at one of these. So if we want to find like a both what and where, all right, so what it's asking is, we'll ask for like barbecue in Miramar, Florida, which happens to be where we are. And we click find, it'll go out to the location that we ask for and put push pins out there in each of the spots where one of the something that matches the search terms comes.
Isn't that
up.
Cool? Okay. Isn't that cool?
So if I wanted to, I could just take that source code and pull it back to my application and fiddle around with it, you know, and again, customize things a little bit.
Is there a cost to this, Stan? Is this a
Virtual Earth?
Yeah.
Did I mention the cost was free?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's free. It's free. Now, there are some terms of service. You know, you can't hit the site more than like 25,000 times an hour or something like that. I'm not sure exactly what the metrics are. But
read the main page when you come into it. You'll see the thresholds that are on the bottom of the page. And if thresholds are very high, you're going to need, you know, 24/7 support, obviously, for your app, because it's going to be a very heavy, heavy app. But for the most part, for a lot of needs that a lot of us in this room, for example, are doing, this is a perfect solution and a good tool for that.
Okay, do we have a question out here?
How extensive is it with the KML?
So you have KML that's going to be it's a specialized XML for geography.
Joe's got an answer over there.
Virtual Earth supports KML, which is keyhole markup language. That's essentially Google's proprietary markup language. It also supports the regular GPS standard formats for importing GPS waypoints as well. That's one way of getting points to scale. You can have a KML file or a regular GeoRSS file sitting there, which is a little more standard, and then you can just import those files right in.
Thanks, Joe. Russ's Toolshed is a community event, you know, so a lot of times...
We actually got some community help out here,
yeah,
too. That was very good.
Help out there is good.
So I'm in SQL Server Management Studio now, 2008, and we're going to take a look at how spatial data can be used inside of Virtual Earth. So I'm showing the AdventureWorks 2008 database, which you can download and install in your own development machines. And we'll take a look at this person.address table. And I've already popped it open here, and we can look and see that over toward the right-hand side, we have some columns, or a column that's actually called spatial location. So we have this specially encoded set of data that describes the location that particular record goes with. So what this is a list of stores that are part of the AdventureWorks database.
So spatial data is all about analysis of geography in an application. So that field holds things like latitude, longitude, lots of additional information in binary format.
So we also have created a get stores stored procedure here, and I'll switch over to that. We can take a look at what that is basically. And what it's going to do is create a polygon, a polygonal area that we're...
Is that just a word?
I think it's a word. we'll dub it a word if it's not. And we'll pull back a little bit of information about those elements that we're pulling out of that table at the same time. So if I
the geography for the object is what's key there. And
right.
Setting the region to that particular object. And now what we're going to see is how to use that inside of Visual Studio.
Right. So I've got a spatial application that has been created. And in Visual Studio again, so there's a default page here that we're looking at in the designer. And actually, you can see that what there is in the designer is a large blank area at the top with a Get Stores button underneath it. So that's a little unusual in a web page because there's this big block. So let's go and take a look at what's behind that. And what we'll find is that it's a script reference, okay, it's a div for... The virtual earth map is what we're calling it here. We have a size set on it that describes the size of the area. Now, in the input, this get stores button is going to on click. It's going to return the get stores on click method, which is just down below. So get stores on click is going to call this awspatialapp.storeQueryService. So we have a little web service built in here that it's going to call into, and it's going to call the getStores method in that web service. All right. And then when the data retrieval complete fires, what we'll do is we'll grab that data that comes out of we'll new up some VE lat long variables and grab that spatial data out and actually stick a push pin in the place of each of those things and add a title and description to it. Okay? So that's what's happening on the web page itself. Let's go and take a quick look over at the web service source code. Here's the stored procedure name. This is just ADO.NET code, you know, standard ADO.NET code. So it calls the DBO.getStores method right here and just executes a reader and pulls back the data, you know, from that store with a reader. And here we can see that the SQL geography variable type is used to grab that spatial location back out of the data. And we're going to take the latitude and longitude out of that geo object that we're creating, and we're going to add each of those elements to the stores. Okay?
Just show them the IntelliSense in that geo object right there so they can kind of get a feel for the methods and properties.
Oh, this one right here.
Hit the dot over there so they can see that right after geo.
Okay, so if I hit dot, we can see that there's a number of different methods that are available to us. You know, as methods, and actually all these ST routines here are all standards-based geo-mapping type routines that can be used to, you know, to query data and to manipulate the geo data, that's the spatial data that's coming back from the application. Okay, so I need to get rid of that dot to run this. All right, so what we'll do then is just, again, show the default page in the browser. Now, the shape of the data that comes back is actually sort of a big triangle that's going to cover the eastern part of the Midwest from Wisconsin to Michigan and down into Florida. All right, so what we're basically doing here is joining data that comes back with that spatial location piece to filter the data that comes back out of the database. So we're only going to display the things that are inside that particular region.
But really, the basics we saw there in the JavaScript was very similar to what we saw in the sample pages, right, that we looked at, where you set the reference out to the virtual Earth, you go ahead and you load the map up, and then there was a little bit of additional logic then that populated the push pins you're about to see once you go down there and push the Get Stores button.
Right. The Get Stores button then will go off, make that web service call out to our local database, and pull back that spatial data and populate the map with
push
pins.
How about that, huh? Woo-hoo! I'm going to go back to my screen. The next tool that Stan is going to show is about your machine, and this is called SysInternals, a set of tools, and a lot of great utilities. And Stan, I'm just going to let you go ahead and talk about it. So why don't you go ahead and bring up your demos here on SysInternals and share this information with all the folks. Take it away.
Thank you, Russ. Appreciate that. All right, so what I've done on my machine here is I've downloaded the SysInternals tools. Now, SysInternals is a website. If you go to sysinternals.com, it'll actually redirect you now to the TechNet website inside of Microsoft. So SysInternals is a company that was formed by Mark Rusinovich and Bryce Cogswell. You might have heard of these fellas. Mark Rusinovich was the guy who outed Sony, you know, for putting rootkits into their music, you know, for DRM. So these guys both work for Microsoft now. In fact, Mark is a technical fellow. So they're continuing to develop these tools, and you can actually download them from Microsoft. So I've downloaded the entire package. So this list of things that's in this directory are all SysInternals tools. Now there's a number of these things. There's way too many to talk about here, so I'm going to focus on just a couple. One of my favorite tools, is Process Explorer. It's a tool that effectively replaces the Task Manager in your system, but it's Task Manager on steroids in a big way. And one of the options at the very top, which I always use, the first option is to replace Task Manager, which I've already done here. You can see that in place of Task Manager, if I right-click on the taskbar and ask for Task Manager, or I Control-Alt-Delete and ask for Task Manager, this will come up. Okay. So along with this is, by Control-I, we can get the actual system information. So this is the typical-looking Task Manager that shows the amount of CPU and the amount of memory in use and the IOs and things like that. But you get quite a bit more information at the bottom of the screen down here about the physical memory in use and the paging list and the paging files and that sort of thing. But what's What's the best about Process Explorer is the main window here, where in the bottom section I can show the lower pane, and down here I can actually put DLLs or file handles down there. So if I pick an application, now we've gotten a list of all the DLLs that are in use by that particular process that I showed at the top. Now, if I double-click on one of these guys, it'll bring up an additional window now that provides information about the image, where it comes from, whose it is, where it's located on the disk, what the command line that launches it is, our own set of performance metrics for that particular application only, the performance graph for only this particular application that's running, and so on. So the Process Explorer is a great way of understanding what's going on underneath the covers on your machine. You can stop processes, you can change their priorities from here. There's a whole number of things that you can do in the drop-down menus, finding handles or DLLs if you know their names, and so on. There's tons of functionality here.
Got a question, sir?
If I see some unexpected network activity and I don't know what process is using it, will this tool show me the culprit?
It may not show you the culprit exactly, but it can show you which processes are consuming I.O., and you can then kind of follow the trail. You know, sometimes you have to do some detective work and, you know, understand what you're looking at and dig around, but it'll show you which applications are using the I.O. in your system, and then you can kind of zoom in and take a look at those individual apps and try to figure out what's going on.
And we have another question over here.
If there's a file that can't be deleted because of access denied, is there a way to search which process has a handle on it and then kill the process so you can delete the file? Is that possible?
So the answer is yes. There's a find function in the Process Explorer that will let you go and look at what files are locked. Another tool which is really great is called the AutoRuns tool. And what that does is it digs into the system and finds all the different places in which applications may install start points. And right now, by default, it comes up on the Everything tab, and it will start to populate this list. If we go to look, for example, at the Logon tab, so as you log in, this is showing you registry keys that are, you know, that may have something behind them that affect processes that get run at login. You can look at all the scheduled tasks on your system. You can look at all the services and where they start up from. So this shows you all of the known places inside the Windows operating system in which processes can begin when your system starts up, or like in an auto run situation. So this is a very nice diagnostic tool for figuring out, you know, where something is coming from. Now there's a number of other tools that come in sysinternals. In particular, there's a process monitor, you know, that's the old, you know, file monitor and registry monitor. There's a TCP view that you can actually look at all the TCP endpoints in use and which applications have those TCP endpoints open, which is a lot better than netstat, which kind of does the same thing. There's a contig process. Contig is a way of actually defragging an individual file. And there's a way of defragging page files as well. So there's so many tools in here that it's almost impossible to talk about very quickly, but download this thing and start looking through the help files on these, and you'll find probably at least a half a dozen tools that do something really well that there may be, you know, tools in the Windows SDK for or something, but this just does it that much better. All right. So these guys with sysinternals have really set the bar high on building developer utilities.
So my favorite, of course, is, as a presenter,
Zoomit, I bet.
Yes.
Well, I can probably even show how Zoomit works. I think if I push the Control 1 key, which is the hot key here, you can see that it actually zooms in on a particular area of the screen. And if I use the mouse wheel, it can change the amount of zoom that I've got. Yeah. I can also go into a drawing mode by pushing a different control key. So now I can draw. For example, I can draw a rectangle by holding the control key down, and I can change the colors by doing things like pushing the R button, and then the tab key will let me draw an ellipse.
Okay.
So
give it up, Mr. Specialty.
Zoomit is great.
All right, Fiddler by Microsoft. This is a tool that we talked about in the intro that really started the whole concept for It's All About the Tools, and it's a great, great tool. It allows you to do debug proxy, which logs all of your HTTP traffic between the computer and the internet, and it's a very, very useful tool. I've seen it solve several problems. Some customers have come up to me and said, Russ, we had a problem on this one machine, and we could not figure out why this app was running so slow. And as it turned out, that particular machine was locked down so hard in this corporation, every time they went to fire this app up, it had to reload all the images down across the wire, and that's why it was taking up so much time. With Fiddler, you're able to see things like that. So those are the types of problems it solves. One usage note, you need to actually put the actual URL in. Not localhost is not supported, but if you put localhost dot as part of the name, you'll be able to go ahead and monitor the traffic as well.
Just a simple dot after localhost.
So let's go ahead and bring it up. So what I have here is a WCF application, which is a great technology to allow one application to talk to another, no matter what the protocol, whether you're using TCP/IP, whether you're using pipes, whether you're using regular old traditional web services. Anytime you're talking about talking between applications, think WCF, because it's a common set of libraries that are being used, and it's all configurable through a configuration file. So it makes it very, very easy to go from one type of protocol to another. For example, we're looking at the config file here for the host application. So I've got two apps that are going to talk to each other. One's called host, one's called client. So the host will be serving up the messaging. You can see I've got two different bindings. I've got a secure binding and I've got a basic binding. Notice the base address is where I actually have the machine name that I'm running on. If I go back now and take a look over at the client application, very similar type of thing you'll see in its config file where we actually specify those two types of binding as well as the actual name of the machine. So you can see there, once again, we got a secure binding and a basic binding. Now, of course, in basic binding, it's going to be all clear text, everything you can see coming across the wire, which may or may not be what you want to do. So let's fire up these applications. I'm going to go ahead and bring up the host application first. You'll see the service running up in the text box. It's not very impressive as far as the UI goes. The client is really not much more impressive. It's just a form that's going to have two buttons on it, one of which is call basic binding, hello world, and call secure binding, hello world.
Woo-hoo.
Aren't you impressed? Yes, yes. Well, what's really impressive is if you bring up Fiddler, then you can actually see what's going on. So we'll go ahead and load up Fiddler. And I'm running version 2.207. I just downloaded this the other day. And now if I go ahead and start using this and do the same demo, I'll do a call basic, and then I'll do a call secure. We'll take a look at what appears over in the messaging traffic area. And so the hello basic, if you come down to it, you take a look at the inspectors, several different things you can do here between web form views, text views, raw. We'll go right down to XML, and there you can actually see the hello world coming across as clear text. Now, this tool has also been used to detect security breaches in applications. I think, Pierre, I think you were telling me about one of those that that you encountered. If you look at the secure binding going across at the same XML view, I don't know, can anybody read that here? I mean, it's all encrypted, right? That's what's going on. That is actually by default the default communication that WCF uses. So once again, Fiddler is a very, very useful tool, and it's one that it is used by several folks to help solve these type of problems. And if you ever have that type of problem, Fiddler is the tool that you want to check into. One more thing before we close off the topic on Fiddler, I do want to show you one thing up on the website. And if you go out to download Fiddler from this site, there are add-ons now. This is actually a configurable application. And you can see that there is a syntax view inspector now. There's a web view inspector. There's one here that looked really interesting. There's a rules tab. This one right here where you can actually display thumbnail images and found in all your sectors. So this will actually come through as part of the messaging that you're looking at. How about that? Pretty nice stuff. All right, so next up we have a Windows Live SkyDrive. So just like we saw Virtual Earth as part of live services, just like we saw SilverlightLive.live.com, this is another one of those types of services. And this is basically a hard drive available for you in the clouds. And it's free once again. The storage has been raised. It's actually higher than that now. Let's actually go out to it. We'll take a look at it. So what I have here is my own SkyDrive, and it's really nice, especially if you're sharing pictures maybe with family members or maybe source code with coworkers or things that are just too large to send in an email, but you want to park them somewhere up on, you know, a cloud or the internet. So you can see you've got the ability, I got like my tool shed artwork up here in mine. You got the ability to, you know, store files. You can take a look at the storage up here. Now they give you 25 gig, right, is the storage space that you have available. So that's a good amount, right, that you have up there. Pictures, right, a lot of photos. Keep all your photos. So if you go out to Spaces site, it actually will incorporate those. I have some CodeCamp slides up there, PowerPoint slides.
What if I want to put some pictures up there that I only want you to see?
Well, what you can do is you can go ahead and create a folder. That's a good question, Stan. And you have the ability to say who you want to share it with. So this is just not a public one. You can actually pick specific users that you only want to see those files. So you have that capability as well. So your network, just me, or you could select individual folks that would have a live ID to come on in and look at that data. Pretty nice? Not bad. Okay. All right, so next up we're going to talk about a WPF app styling application from Infragistics. And I'd like to introduce Mr. Jason Beers. We give it up for Mr. Jason.
Thank you. Thanks, Ross. So what we're going to show today is how to beautifully style WPF applications with no code, no design team. And I think that is what Russ talked about in the beginning, how designer and developers don't really get along very well. Well, I'm going to make it easier for you to become more like a designer, even though we're all developers. Thank you.
All right.
Right now, this is a world premiere. So actually, if you go to infragistics.com, WPF styling, you can download this. And as well, we're offering a free data grid for WPF and some other things up there. So I encourage you to download this, try it out, give us feedback, and kind of bring out the designer in you. So let's take a look at how this works.
See, these are serious tools. That's why I put the hard hat on.
I feel good, yeah.
That's all right.
That's nice.
I'll spray the details. Go ahead.
Okay, so the first thing I'm going to do is bring up a WPF application I already have written. And you can see that this WPF app kind of feels like Windows Forms. It looks good. I can tell it's WPF. It's this next generation awesome experience I'm supposed to get, but it still has this gray look. So what I want to do is bring it into, you know, the 21st century, add some Office 2007 colors to it, but I'm not a designer. So let's close this out. I'm going to go to Expression Blend and start a new WPF app. So I'm going to go into my asset gallery. Grab a couple controls. So let's grab a couple buttons, just drag them on. And if you've never used Blend, you can see it's pretty easy design experience. Grab some sliders. And the reason I'm doing this is just to show how these controls get affected by the technology. So let's grab a tab, a few tabs. So we're all set, hit F5, run this guy, and you can see that this is my app. And again, it's WPF, but it doesn't feel like WPF yet. So I want to add some style. So I'm going to right-click, go to References. And you'll notice here in my add reference dialog is there's some theme assemblies. This is what I want you guys to go download. This will bring out the designer in you. So let's add those theme assemblies, go back to my asset library, go to custom controls, and you can see now that I have some theme assemblies in there. So let's go ahead and take Office Black, grab it on.
Oh.
Nice, huh?
Sweet, sweet.
Let's hit F5 and run this guy. So like magic, no designer, I have my Office 2007 black colors. Very cool, all my states are correct. Pretty neat, huh? No code. Joe Homnick taught me this years ago. He's like, no code. We don't want code. Yeah, give it up to Joe. All right. Now let's drag the blue theme. So I drag blue on there, and now look, I have the blue colors. Beautiful Office 2007 blue. Yeah, beautiful, huh? Let's take a look at the XAML. So what's happened here in the XAML is when you add the references, the namespace gets added to your window. So that's normal. That's just like any other assembly in WPF. And then essentially the control is a non-visual component that gets added to the form. There's some magic that happens in there, and we're refreshing the resource dictionaries. So who's ever heard of a resource dictionary? Yeah, I didn't think so, because you're not designers, you're developers. So why should we have to worry about this? This is where we can help out here. So let's take a look at this in Visual Studio. So I have the Theme Tester app, same thing I ran in the very beginning. And what I'm going to do here is I'm not going to write code, I'm just going to highlight some code. So here what we want to do is kind of switch themes at runtime. So I'm loading the theme in the window load event here, and I want to show you one key piece of this. The theme target here is application. So I drag this component onto the main form, the main window of my app. Every other window gets styled with this color. I don't have to do this for every single form. Now, if I want to, I can change the scope to local, which would be the panel that the control is in. So maybe a canvas, a stack panel, or a grid, or I can do just the window that I'm on. So let's just keep it with application, like so. I'm going to hit F5, run the same theme tester app, and like magic, we have a beautifully styled WPF or Office 2007 blue app. So these are some InfraGistics controls. Here's the system controls. So look at that. No design team, no code. Yeah. But you know what? I know David Silverlight loves Office 2007 black, so let's switch the theme up. Without having to restart the app, I've just applied the theme, and now it magically changed to Office 2007 black, and now let's try silver, and there we go. No code, no restarting of the app, and like magic, we have no design team, but beautiful styling.
That's incredible. Just incredible.
Thanks, Russ. Back to you.
So if you are developing applications for Office, and there are many different types of applications that are supported now with Visual Studio 2008, whether it's Excel, whether it's Outlook, whether it's PowerPoint, Word, of course, they're all supported now. And I'll show you some of the templates that are available when you go to create an application. I already loaded up a Excel workbook app, and I'll show you how I got here. I did a file, a new project, and Visual Studio 2008 Professional and Higher has this built right in. So if you have that version or higher of Visual Studio, you'll now see an Office section, and you can see there are 2003 and 2007 templates. Now, and it has all come together with this release. You can do both application-centric add-ins or document-centric add-ins with these products. And so application would run whenever the application hooks up. You'll see always have like a push button at the top. It's available no matter what application you're creating or what document you're creating. Document-centric, of course, is fine-tuned to that particular document. So if you have a Word document that has several fields in it, for example, and you want a corresponding pane maybe to go along with each field as you're navigating from field to field, you can do that type of development here as well. You can see all the products that are supported: Excel, InfoPath, PowerPoint, SharePoint, Visio, Word. You got Outlook, Project, and a lot of different apps there. And once again, for 2003, you have fewer products that are supported, but you still can do 2003 development as well. The thing to point out here, too, is that you do need, of course, to have this installed on your development machine, Office 2007, in order for you to do development work, okay? And you need to have the appropriate licenses when you go to deploy applications for Office-type apps. So let's go ahead and create our add-in. I brought in the Excel. I'm going to go ahead and slide a name ranged object over here to the corner cell. And then what we're going to do is just add a little bit of code behind this. We're going to first of all bring up the properties for this. And let's go ahead and bring up the properties. We're going to call this thing my cell. And then what we're going to do is double click on it just like you would in a normal, like a WinForm application. And once we're in there, what we'll do is we'll go ahead, and you can see you've got a drop-down list here for the cell, and we can go ahead and do a change event. And let's go ahead and just put a little bit of text in here for this. And there's my cell showing up right in the IntelliSense. So we'll go ahead and just replay the text that's in that particular cell. Let's go ahead and run this application. So now anytime I basically change the contents, you know, of that cell, move off of it, it'll pick it up and go ahead and display it in a text box. Now what we'll do is go ahead and try it out. We'll go ahead and type in, put some letters in there, move off, and up comes our message box. How about that? This one here is actually code that builds a PowerPoint deck. And this is something very useful, especially what I do for a living. I do a lot of presentations. And let me just run it so you can actually see what the application looks like. And it's basically an add-in he wrote for PowerPoint. And what it will do is now you'll see an add-ins kind of tab up on the ribbon control. And on it will be a button. And once that button is clicked, here's the add-ins. It will go ahead and create the whole program, the whole PowerPoint, programmatically. And as it creates it, it's going to bring in all the resources. It's going to create all the objects it needs that works with the PowerPoint objects inside the object libraries. He's going to be pulling in data. We got video coming up in these applications. If I go ahead and show the application, you can go ahead and see the actual PowerPoint presentation. It's not too long, but it's enough to give you an idea of what you can do here. He's even got a WMV file that he's got thrown into one of these decks that's all done programmatically, as well as bringing in some nice graphics and local scores of the NL West. Okay, and so that was that demo. Now the code, if you take a look at the code, this will start up here at the top. So here we have the click event that's going to invoke, and he's going to set some variables up to some of the assets that he has, including that movie file that you saw, some of the JPEGs that he's got in here. But then it gets into the interesting part where you see we got objects that are for the slides, the shapes, you get the text ranges, the fonts, the shadows. You got your window state property being set to be maximized when it comes up. And then pulls in the template that he has. He's got a template for these slides, and then here's the first slide. He goes ahead and creates that. Remember, it said Visual Studio 2008. With VSTO 3.0 rocks. So that's the code that was there. And you can see the code. And we'll all have this all available for download up on our Toolshed site with each slide being built one at a time. And he even pulls in data here from an XML file to give you those West League standings, right, that he showed up in the file. It's just some incredible stuff here. And what we got here is looks like about a couple, maybe 300 lines of code. It kind of give you an idea of a real-world application that is data-driven, and you can just dynamically build your PowerPoint decks from here on in. How about that? Pretty nice. So we're going to end with the last segment of the show, which is about community, developer community. So I'd like to bring up Mr. Joe Healy. Give him a round of applause. Come on up, Joe.
So a bunch of good community stuff happening. This is kind of quick community brief. The big one is Mix is coming up. So if you're one of those designer developer types into the new UI, definitely a show to check out. Of course, a couple days in Vegas ain't going to hurt anyone. We do have the famous MSDN events. That's led by Mr. Russ Festino coming up. And nationwide, Florida rocks, though. Anyway, if you're not in one of those cities, check out my website, devfish.net, for the Tiki Hut locations. We're shipping those around to every place the MSDN Roadshow doesn't go. So that's some pretty exciting stuff there. ASP.NET and Visual Studio Connections is coming to Orlando. Pay event there. Orlando Code Camp's coming up. Just like this awesome Code Camp we're at today, there'll be one in Orlando on March 28th. Great event. Jessica Sterner and Fabio are putting that together up there, and the speaker lineup is already incredible. New thing going in the area that started in Florida by our very own Andy Warren is SQL Saturday. So essentially these are SQL Server and data focused code camps exclusively on SQL geared topics. The next one coming up in Florida is June 6th, I believe, in Pensacola. Beautiful location, but they do have these all over. Check out SQLSaturday.com. Again, Andy Warren's creation. Beautiful thing there. Tech Ed, it's going to be in Los Angeles, so that's in June. If you make it out there, that'll be an exciting event as well. Go to Microsoft Events site, and you can find all kinds of stuff about various roadshow, Tiki Hut, Firestarters, Code Camps, whatever, going on all across the place. One thing on community, this is something I've been plugging personally a lot. If you are a startup who's writing kind of websites or software as a service, you can get essentially free development and operational software licenses for your startup. Just curious, is anyone in here a member of BizSpark already? Wow, look at that. This is awesome. And in fact, the Homnics over there are what we call a network provider.
Network provider. When you go up to the Microsoft site and you say, I want to sign up for this program and get all this cool new free software and stuff like that, we've got over 170 firms in Florida alone that are using this program. In fact, one was Linkster was recently named Startup of the Day, which was a big honor, but I'm not going to sit there and click on all these guys and verify them. So we've got trusted partners in like Homnic Systems to go out there and work with these people and make sure that they're legit and basically usher people through the process. But really good program. Check it out. You know, in this economy, hey, free software, good software, help you get your business up and going. Operational and developer licenses for 3 years, so good deal. If you're looking for your local user groups, Community Megaphone is a good spot to start, kind of a national repository of user groups. You can also go to CodeZone for it, but those two are becoming integrated, and we're finding Community Megaphone is a great place to locate your local user groups.
Yeah. The Flash.
So if you're not subscribed to the MSDN Flash newsletter, I actually do the customizations on that for like Florida. I try and put every local user group, every free event that's .NET here or SQL here that I can find in the state, makes it in that newsletter, and then we always try and highlight something happening locally. So if you know somebody who's writing a Microsoft book or something like that, we'll try and get them published in there, and I get a link to the book and do some stuff.
Like get to know your local PE. There's a website you can go to up on Microsoft. Just go to Microsoft.com, go to the local office. If you don't know who your DE is, call the local office, and the local office doesn't know who the DE is. My email is jdealey@microsoft.com. Email me, and I'll tell you who your developer evangelist is. So that's about it. We also have a ton of MVPs, at least in this area. We're really, really blessed with a bunch of good folk out there who are MVPs. Any MVPs in this room? So these are folks who basically are teachers. They go around in our area. They try and help people. They try and teach them. They try and work with them. A lot of speakers here today are MVPs. Just great people out around. They are pretty deep subject matter experts and are good resources to help you connect in with the community and to solve some technology problems. You get to know your local MVPs. Of course, RussToolshed.net, the home of the great Russ's Toolshed, so you can find out everything that's happening with him there. If you're in Florida and you're interested in Florida events, DevFish is pretty much geared towards either interesting problems I've solved lately or local community. And that's it.
Thanks, everybody. Don't cut it, no.